It's been said wrongly that man was not meant to fly. Well, you can fly, and we're going to show you how in the Arrowverse. Welcome to In the Arrowverse. I'm Christy Wong.
And I'm Dan Milliken. It's really important that we share aviation with everybody around. And if you're not a pilot, this show's for you to learn how to become a pilot. And if you are a pilot, this show's for you because we're going to talk about how to include and get other aviation enthusiasts that magical pilot license.
And who better to do that than Pat Brown from AOPA?
Pat, thank you so much for coming.
Nice to see you.
We love
you.
I know, we love you so much.
So Pat, I've known you for years because of AOPA, because right. as an ambassador, but you're not anymore. Explain real quick your background and what you were and now what you are.
Well, the Reader's Digest version is I started flying when I was 16 years old. That's a long time ago. I tell folks that I'm only 27 now, but I look this way because...
Well, you don't look a day over 28.
Well, I'm a professional flight instructor. We'll do that too. So at any rate, I've been flying for a long time. Went to work for AOPA. I owned a flight school. I was in the music business for a while. You guys know all that. I was owned a flight school for a number of years, and AOPA came calling one day and asked if I was interested in doing this ambassador program, and nobody really knew what that was at the time. We were inventing it as we went along. But we were responsible for helping people start flying clubs and work with flight schools who might be challenged with customer service issues. We were doing the Rusty Pilot Program that we've talked about before and some other things that all came under the heading of You Can Fly, which was a division of AOPA.
Why you, Pat? Why did AOPA come knocking on your door specifically?
I wish I knew that. I'm asking that to this day. I think I was at the right place at the right time. I had a history with them because I had been doing Air Safety Institute seminars all over the country. You remember back in the day when we used to do them a couple of times a year up here, and mm-hmm. COVID kind of wiped that out, and we haven't gotten back to doing that yet. But I kind of was on their radar from that. And when this program was envisioned, Katie Pribble called me and said, would you be interested in doing something like that? And I thought, well, let's at least have a conversation and see what it's about. So I went up to headquarters, went through, talked to several people, and they kind of told me what the vision was. Again, starting flying clubs and working with flight schools. And we have a high school aviation curriculum that's a free four-year curriculum to any high school that wants it, free. Those are the kind of things that You Can Fly does. Then about 18 months ago, I was feeling like I've got to just kind of slow down a little bit. I'm becoming an elderly gentleman.
No.
And decided I just want to slow down a little bit. But I'd like to stay involved with AOPA. Well, we gave away $1 million worth of scholarships. Actually, every year for the last 3 or 4 years, we've given away scholarships, flight training scholarships, about $1 million a year. And 2 years ago, we started a trial program where the ambassadors, myself included, were mentoring the kids through this program, and it turned out to be very successful doing that. So I said, well, I'd just like to be a mentor. And they said, well, if you're not going to do the ambassador thing, why don't you just take all the kids? Okay, great. So this year, I have 140 kids that I'm mentoring all over the country and getting them through their pilot certificates. And to date, for this cohort, they call them, this group of kids, we've had 54, 55 of them that have actually gotten their pilot certificate. AOPA has paid $10,000 towards that.
Wow.
For these particular scholarships. We've had a half a dozen or so that have gotten their instrument ratings, two or three that have gotten their CFI certificates. We have a bunch of kids that have gone through the maintenance side of things, but that's a different group. But I have found that to be just almost the most fulfilling thing I've ever done. These kids send me pictures via email of, of them holding their certificate with a big smile on their face, or when they've gotten their shirt tail cut or whatever the case may be. And to know that I've been a part of that, I tell you, there's just nothing
like
it.
That sounds so fulfilling.
It is awesome.
If there is a high school student out there mm-hmm. that wants to get involved in this mentor, you know, as a mentoring.
Mentee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. How would they go about doing that?
Well, they have to have been awarded an AOPA scholarship. That's the first thing. I mean, I don't mind talking to any kid that wants to call and have a conversation. I'm happy to talk to them. They can go to my website, shameless plug, HoustonDPE.com. there's a lot of information on that, but my phone number is on there. My email address is on there. Welcome to contact me if they have a conversation or they want to have a conversation. I do have limited time. I can't just be on the phone all day. But I'm happy to talk to people if they get stuck. I do get telephone calls and emails from people that watch other podcasts and things that I do that have questions that arise because of something like that. So I'm available.
That's amazing. Now, you're... The more likely scenario is that it's going to be somebody like me a few years ago, obviously wasn't a high school student, but wanted to get into aviation.
Right.
What are those first steps look like?
Well, you know, you can always walk out to your local airport or drive out to your local airport. You know, that used to be a lot easier than it is now, especially in bigger cities where there's barbed wire and fences around everything that says you're not welcome here. But, you know, when I grew up in a small town of 7,000 people, you could just drive out and you could drive onto the runway. Who knew?
Right. They still do that at Hicks.
Yeah, yes. Yes, they do, as a matter of fact. Yes. But, do a Google search. Professor Google knows everything. It's the repository of the entire world's knowledge right now. It's your fingertips. So Professor Google Flight School is near me. AOPA has a search engine on our website where you can find flight schools. Walk in. Just walk in without an appointment. See if you're greeted warmly. First of all, that's a really good indication of a good flight school is if somebody pays attention when you walk in. If they don't, turn around, walk out again, because there's other flight schools that are out there that will welcome you in. But that would be one. Just walk into a flight school and say, look, I'm interested in learning how to fly. And hopefully there's a CFI or somebody available to sit down with you and kind of walk you through what the process is. Or, look, all of our CFIs are flying right now. That's a good sign. Can you come back tomorrow or can we set an appointment where you can talk to our chief or one of our flight instructors, what have you? So really, just walking into a flight school would be step number one.
I like it. So step number one, find a flight school. Maybe even if you don't want to take lesson one and drop down a ton of cash, you can at least do a discovery flight.
Yes, a discovery flight would be terrific. That's simply, it's exactly what it sounds like. You're just telling somebody, I'm interested in learning how to fly. Convince me that I should.
Right, well, because maybe the individual really likes the idea of flying, but maybe they're scared of heights.
Exactly.
Or they think that they're susceptible to motion sickness. Yeah. And at least with a discovery flight, you can kind of see where you fall on that.
Well, let me tell you a little secret. I'm scared of heights.
Yeah.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And people that don't fly, haven't flown, think scared of heights and flying, but it's actually, in a plane, there's not that fear of heights.
You're usually scared of falling.
Right.
Yeah.
Is really what it is.
Yeah, it's not scared of heights. It's scared of falling. And when you're belted into an airplane, you're not going to fall.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's...
Unless you're in a steerman going upside down, but yeah.
It's the fear of falling, you know, when you're on a ladder or something like that. That's when I get really, really nervous. And I say fear of heights, but it's really the fear of falling.
Yeah.
Discovery flight is terrific. And normally, they'll put you in the left seat with an experienced CFI in the right seat. And most of the time, they'll actually let you taxi. Oftentimes, they'll let you take off with the CFI kind of close to the controls. Mm-hmm. You will fly most of the flight. They may, depending on where you're flying out of or back into, may let you fly the pattern, may let you fly the approach. So I
just did a discovery flight last week for a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah, I saw your post.
Yeah. Oh, this girl's got an incredible story, actually. She was headed down the wrong path. Came across airplanes and was like, hey, I would rather invest my money into airplanes rather than drugs kind of attitude. Right. But they didn't know who to reach out to. So it was like a friend of a friend. They knew that I gave discovery flights, so I took her up. I let her follow the controls for the takeoff. I did let her do some taxiing. I taught her the fundamentals. I took her up. Now, I didn't let her do the landing. I did let her go up. She was in the left seat. She did turns. Mm-hmm. I cleared the area and then just let her have it.
Right.
You bank. I'll let you know if you go too far. I mean, she did great.
Right.
Coming back in, it was, you know, the Denton Airport's very busy.
Yes, it is.
So I flew it, but I asked her if she wanted to do the clearance call, like clear to land.
Oh, very
This is a special touch that I put on my Discovery flights. Would you like to do the, and then of course they get really scared. Yeah. So we're like 20 miles out and we practice it. This is what the controller's going to say. This is what you say back. And so when we got our clear to land, I said, all right, you're on. And I held the button for her. She said, clear to land, 18 left, 51 whiskey. And then I was just like, that was so great. Yeah. It didn't matter how good or not,
right.
You know, but that was so great. I'm so proud of you, blah, blah, blah.
And her confidence level went up like that.
Times like 600.
Yeah.
We get on the ground. She is like, just doesn't even know what to say. And of course I'm like, yeah, mom, we took these pictures. She did this, and this. Yeah. And then she did the clear to land call and mom is just over there beaming and that's my girl. And so these are life changing experiences. These Discovery flights are super important.
And the thing is, you know, so many of these kids, they don't know what they don't know. They don't know that these things are available to them. And I wish I had an answer to that. AOPA does have a high school curriculum. We talked about that before. That's free to any high school that wants it. It's a 4-year complete curriculum in a box. There is nothing that the school has to do. We have, I've forgotten the number of schools in Texas that are teaching that curriculum. I think it's 18 or 20. It might be more than that. It might be 30. Several of them are up here in the Dallas area. And this is a 4-year curriculum, totally in the box. It doesn't even require a pilot to be teaching it. So a teacher, just a regular teacher, could teach this curriculum. It's all right there. And at the end of the second year, it splits into two paths. One is drones, and the other is the professional pilot career. So they can go. It's a parallel path the first 2 years. But we have 3 or 4 schools in Houston. And I'll take those kids, and periodically we'll bring 5, 6, 8, 10 of them or whatever out to the airport, and I'll put them in the 182. We'll go fly. And a couple in the back, one in the front, and the one in the front will fly. And I'll do that 6, 8 times a year. Just in the land, especially the one that was flying the airplane, just like you said, because usually mom or dad, or there's somebody there chaperoning the group, including their teachers. But boy, I tell you, the smile when they get out of the airplane, it's just
they're just beaming.
They are beaming.
And that's why I keep doing it. For the adults that are watching and want to get into aviation, what do you see are some of the biggest obstacles that they come across while wanting to learn how to fly?
Wow. Cost.
Yeah, money's a big thing.
I mean, I'll just say that's probably the biggest impediment. But when you look at the cost, you have to kind of put it in perspective. When I learned how to fly back in 1990, I'll tell you, I've been flying for 54 years.
That's amazing.
And but when I started learning how to fly in 1969, my private pilot certificate cost me, if I remember right, about $2,000. Now, $2,000. But that was in 1969 dollars.
What would that be in 2024 dollars?
Roughly 12.
Okay.
Roughly 12.
So it's comparable.
So it's actually quite comparable. So when people say it's too expensive to learn how to fly, I say, well, do you play golf?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's
a matter of choices.
$200 for 18
that
holes or something like that. You know, do you have a boat? A boat,
right.
You know, boat is just an acronym for bring on another 1,000. So, you know,
I've never heard
yeah,
that.
boats are hole in the water where you throw money. Well, airplanes, same thing. So, hole in the sky where you throw money, it's the same thing. So, it's about priorities. If you want to learn how to fly badly enough, you will figure out a way to make it happen. So, I have limited sympathy for that.
No,
that
I agree with that.
But
I agree.
Let's talk about very specifically what for the adult. I mean, they can't go and apply for the 17-year-old high school scholarship, but what are some solutions, possible solutions, you know, that they might have for financial assistance?
Sure. You know, I'm not a fan of borrowing money to finance flight training.
Right.
But that may be the only option. If there are flight training scholarships for adults, I'm not aware of them, and I'm not saying there aren't. I'm just not aware of them.
Are there, like, for female?
There are. Yes, there are. Okay. So there are different scholarships through the Women in Aviation. Right.
So if you're part of a disadvantaged group, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, if you've been in the military, you might be able to use a GI Bill to fund your pilot training through an accredited school, like what we call a Part 141 school.
Right, right. I would encourage people, EAA may offer the same thing without any age restrictions. You know, as I think about it, the scholarships that we offer, we have awarded some scholarships to those folks that are in their 20s.
Okay.
And some of the teachers that are teaching our aviation curriculum who are older than that have been awarded some scholarships. So maybe I misspoke.
Well, but you just couldn't remember off
couldn't
the top
remember.
Of your
Thank
head.
You. It's because
you were born in 19...
That's right. Because I'm an elderly gentleman. Let's just say no. So I guess that would be one way to do it. But I wouldn't want to finance it if I could avoid doing it.
I totally agree, 100%. All right. So after finance, maybe another big obstacle to overcome might be the time required. So what kind of time requirement for somebody who's out there thinking about, I'd like to become a pilot, what kind of time commitment is it going to take?
Well, let's talk about, at least this is just an opinion now, but let's talk about what I think would be optimal. If you could schedule 3 lessons a week, maybe 4, 3 is probably plenty, because what's going to happen is that one of those lessons is probably going to get canceled because of weather, or maybe 2.
Or other things.
Maintenance.
Another one might be canceled because of maintenance. Another one might be canceled because your CFI is sick. I mean, there's any number of things that can happen. So if you schedule 3, you might fly 2. You might fly 3, but you might only fly 2, and you might only fly 1. So if you've only scheduled Wednesday of this week, because that's the only week you can fly, and it rained last week, the week before, and the week before that on Wednesdays, now all of a sudden you're 3 or 4 weeks into it, and there's that 2 steps backward and 1 step forward kind of a thing, where now I've got to go up and refresh myself on all that soft knowledge that I've not yet mastered, holding the airplane straight and level and those kind of things. So scheduling 3 to 4 lessons a week, realizing that that's not going to likely happen all the time. And if you do schedule a lesson and it gets rained out, that's not necessarily a wasted lesson. Get together with the flight instructor and start going over some ground school stuff.
Yep.
Because you can self-study with all of these dot-coms that we've talked about, you know, in the past. And they're all really good. But there's sometimes nothing like just sitting across the table from a flight instructor. People ask, you know, should I take my written test before I start flying? And boy, you get all kinds of opinions on that.
Yep.
If you have a high tolerance for frustration, go ahead and take the written test first, because there are some things that you're not going to have context on and you're not really going to understand. So I'm not a big fan of telling people to take the test first. So, you know, I would say for somebody that was looking at starting to learn how to fly, I would say don't worry about that part of it yet. Let's get you in the cockpit. Let's get you kind of comfortable. Get your CFI to give you reading assignments, homework assignments in between. You should never walk away from a lesson without knowing exactly what you're going to be doing the next time. And with a reading or a viewing assignment on YouTube, or so, a taking off assignment, something like that.
Flips and skids,
You say schedule 3 lessons a week.
Right.
How long of a block is a lesson?
That's another great question. Most schools tend to block around 2 hours.
For my training, that's what it was.
It depends on where you are as to whether that's enough or not.
Right.
If you're at a really, really busy airport like Denton, for example, or Addison, I mean, it could take 30 minutes from the time you start the engine to the time you take off. Well, if it's a 2-hour block of time, you've already hopefully had some sort of a pre-flight briefing before you took off. That's part of that 2 hours.
Right.
Pre-flighting, the airplane is a part of that 2 hours. Now you're 30 minutes to taxi and takeoff. That's part of that. And now we've got 30 minutes in the practice area, of which 10 minutes is spent flying there.
Yeah, because a busy inner city airport that you train at, you might need to fly 20 minutes just to get out of the airspace to a practice area.
That's right. So that 2 hours, which might be perfectly okay in small town America, is probably not going to cut it.
You might need three.
You might need three. So 2 to 3 hours would be my recommendation.
The blocks, when I was a full-time CFI out of Denton, we blocked our students out the flight school for 3 hours for those reasons. And that's so that we could do everything that you said, get out, actually do the lesson, and then come back. And it depends, too, on what the lesson's about.
Yeah, it all depends. Like, for me, it was two-hour blocks that we scheduled. But as somebody who's working full-time and going to train at my own speed, knowing that it was a two-hour block kind of really helped me at least know what I could accomplish and what I couldn't.
Yeah, daylight savings time is upon us. You know, I don't know when this episode will be seen, but if you have daylight savings time on your side, well, it's at least down in this part of the country, it's daylight until 8:30 at night oftentimes. So that's after work. If you can make it to the airport, you can still get a two-hour block of time in comfortably, maybe three.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I will tell you, just from my own personal experience, I think you and I think very similarly. I think it boils down to how determined are you.
Yep.
It boils down to what you're willing to sacrifice in order to get this accomplished. For me, I was willing to sacrifice going out with friends and doing extracurriculars. I was willing to sacrifice.
A new car.
Yeah, I sacrificed getting a new car. Yeah. I still drive my same car.
Good for you.
Like, I have a 20-year-old Honda that I drive.
Barely broken in.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You know, so instead of that, like, I use that money for flight training to buy an airplane, et cetera. I did flying lessons or went and did my solo flying before work. Mm-hmm. I did my flight lessons after work.
Right.
So it just really, it boils down to where you're willing to put your resources.
I think people going into flight training need to understand that, you know, it is a serious time commitment, but I don't want to make it sound onerous either. You know, it is also some of the most fun that you can have on the planet.
Oh, it's so fun. It's so worth it. It's worth the sacrifices.
Yeah. You know, there's an old cliche that some people watching this may not never have heard. We all have. It's a cliche because it's true that 1 mile of road gets you 1 mile and 1 mile of runway gets you anywhere.
Absolutely.
And it is so, so true. We came up today from Houston. It's a would have been a, I guess, to here, probably a four and a half hour, maybe 5 hour drive. With a 30 knot headwind, we were here in under 2 hours. It's just, when you stop and think, my wife and I went to Branson, Missouri over the summertime. It's a 16 hour drive in the car. It was 4 hours in our 182. I mean, these are the kind of things that people need to think about. What is the end goal here? The end goal is to travel by general aviation, where you don't have to submit to body cavity searches when you go through the airport at DFW or whatever. There's nothing like. And by the way, they bring the courtesy car out to you at plane side. So when we landed today, the courtesy car was waiting there.
The red carpet was rolled out.
The red carpet was rolled out, and what can we do for you, sir? And here you go. And you don't get any of that in the airlines. So the freedom of personal transportation is just amazing.
It is. Now, last question. For the pilot out there watching this show right now, what can they do to help encourage aviation for those who aren't in aviation?
Spread the word, give rides.
Yeah. Love it.
Wear a hat that says, you know, something like this one does.
It's like you can fly.
Well, wear a hat that indicates that you're a pilot. I can't tell you the number of times going through like a grocery store checkout line or something where the cashier said, "Are you a pilot?" Oh, thank you for asking. Yes, I am.
Wait a minute. You're saying that a pilot needs to wear an article of clothing that shows that they're a pilot? Because I heard that pilots will automatically announce their pilots in any given social situation.
Is that what you do, Dan?
Well, yeah. I learned from Brian Turner. You let the pilot know when you get on the commercial airliner. You let the cashier know. Yeah.
In case you need some help, I'm in the back. You know?
Right, exactly.
In case you get food poisoning, I'm in the back.
Well, okay, you talked about adages because they're true. How do you know a pilot at a party? He tells you.
He'll tell you, exactly right. Well, there's certainly some truth to that. There is some truth to that. But wearing something that is like an airplane, picture of an airplane or something.
Or like sectional leggings.
Or a sectional, something like that. That would get my attention.
I'm not going to wear that.
Heartbeat. No, no, I don't think you look good at that. No.
But, well, geez, yeah.
But those kinds of things. And look at, you know, if you see neighborhood kids and you know the parents, you know.
Hey, kids, you like
right.
You like airplanes?
Oh, yeah. Okay, wait a minute. We got, yeah.
You're going down the wrong road now, Chrissy. Yeah. Those are the kinds of things. I mean, just be active in the community. That's about coworkers. Ask them if they want to go for a ride. Hey, I'm going to go and head down and have a $100 hamburger over in Stephenville this weekend. You want to go?
Yeah.
If that doesn't set the hook.
I try to infect my coworkers with general aviation. Yeah. All my airline captains that have not
who have forgotten
flown GA in a really long time. Yeah. Hey. Yep. Do you like airplanes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can send them back to your roots. We talked about that before.
Nice. Back to your roots. Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Pat, for coming on to the Arrowverse.
Yeah. Oh,
I gotta have a hug.
Of course, absolutely. Well, thank you guys so much. We really appreciate you tuning in. Please check out the other content on Arrowverse. It's some really good stuff.
Yeah, so watch everything there. And, you know, we appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time.
In the Arrowverse.